Heck of a deal. I was daydreaming. Sorry, I like that reading you just read. Hi, everybody. Craig Clove, alcoholic. Sober since September 28th, 1985, sponsored by a man named Bob Darrell. Very grateful for all that. I will say this about Bob. That guy has been an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous since he found me in a treatment center in the summer of 1985. That's coming up on 37 years ago he found me. And this guy I've watched be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Particularly, he likes the detox centers where there's new people. I know sometimes my relationship with him has almost cured him of his desire to find any more new people, because when he found me, that was more than enough. And I think at times, but you know what? I owe my life to you people in Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that are on this screen, the people that are live in the meeting, wherever, you know, Billy and the gang are right now. I can see some of you, but it's real small. This is fantastic. I am not a guy who would have ever, I don't know, maybe a year ago. Now it's been longer than that. Because people started asking me to do things on this virtual stuff pretty early on. And I'm not techno savvy, so I don't know how to run anything. I always got to have somebody set it up for me. And it seems, and or did have. And I'm scared to death of it. And I thought, boy, that's going to suck. And it's not going to be any good. And I'll tell you what, you know, this thing has been actually fantastic. There's some meetings. We do one on Saturday that I really look forward to. And I rarely miss, you know, yesterday I missed most of it because I was in the middle of helping somebody move into their very first home. And after this meeting, I'm going to go help him get the rest of his stuff. And, you know, it's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting. And Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. I want to welcome anybody that might be early in sobriety. Maybe you're not new. Maybe you've been coming here and maybe you know everybody better than I do. But you're early in sobriety again. And I know how that feels. I know how, I don't want to hurt feelings here. And I usually say, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings right before I do so. But I know that loneliness, and I know that despair, and I know that shame, and I know that disappointment, and I know that remorse and that guilt. And that, what the heck is the use? I'm a failure. I know that feeling. We all know that feeling. I don't think you can be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous if you haven't got in touch with that feeling. There's a line in those famous ninth step promises that says, that feeling of uselessness will disappear. Not the feeling, that feeling. And you guys know, it's like when we talk about with amongst ourselves, oh, I got that look from my parents or my wife or my husband or my kids or my family. I got that look. We know what that look feels like. You know, there's a lot of people never see that look. We see it frequently at times. And the last time I saw that look, I was sober 36 years. So that look isn't just a drinking thing. I understand that feeling of failure and disappointment. I get it. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. I don't care how long you're sober. If you're sitting in on this meeting or in any other meeting, and you're sitting there struggling, ready to jump out of your skin, you don't want to be there. It's your home group. It might be the group you started and you don't feel like you want to be there. You don't feel like, it's not that you don't fit in. It's that you, you know, it's just, man, you've pulled some real whizzos and people aren't too happy about it. And they don't mind giving you the cold shoulder. And it feels like you're being picked on and persecuted. And maybe you are. Maybe you are. But who did that? Who did that? And that's kind of the reality that the men and women that have helped me so much have done is like, how, okay, Craig, I understand, you know, that it's pretty bad. And you pretty much sound and kind of feel like a victim and you speak victimese very fluently. But the question we have is, how did this happen? And you won't let me off the hook. And sometimes being honest at the time, not wanting to discuss it, well, I don't know. Yeah, you know. If you don't know, why don't you try taking some action here and following some direction and doing a little inventory. And let's get down to the truth about the stock in trade. Your delusion is, oh, here comes Craig the good. But is that really what was happening, Craig? For a time it was. But in that, and I'll get to this because I want to lead up to the reading that was read. I think that's a fantastic reading. I think that is an absolutely appropriate reading because you and I attend the same kind of, I don't care where you live. You and I attend the same meetings. We got some crusty old timer saying, or maybe some bleeding deacon that's 15 minutes sober that knows everything about it. I don't listen to those damn stories. That isn't where recovery is. Well, you know what? Maybe not. Maybe not. But then again, where does recovery begin? Does it begin in step four? Does it begin in step one? You go to some meetings I go to, you would think that. Well, recovery really doesn't begin until you sponsor 35 people. Well, then I guess I'm never going to recover because that is never going to happen to Craig Clove. Too much going on. Always has been, and there always will be. Not that I'm not willing to, but I don't chase them around. Anyway, you'll hear him talk at meetings that, well, those stories are a bunch of BS. No, actually, they're not. And, you know, sometimes you go to meetings and think, well, the stories must have been put in the back of the book so we can piss off other people in AA when we read out of them instead of reading out of the first 103 pages. Well, maybe that's true. However, what was read is exactly why they're there. We hope nobody will find them in bad taste. They're there for just talking about each individual from his own experience and from his own point of view. It's just talking about how he came to believe in and established a relationship with a power greater than himself, ultimately that changed his life. That's all. What did you do? That's the first thing I want to know. What's going on here? How's this thing work? Well, you know, we got a chapter of how it works. Yeah, but I don't read instructions. So just give me the lowdown on it. Give me the bullet points and let's just get to it. Well, you know, the first thing they say is rarely have we seen a person fail that's thoroughly followed our path. Okay, hold up a second. Let's talk about the word thoroughly. What does that mean? Well, that means do what we do. Well, I don't know what you do. Well, of course you don't know what we do because you haven't been with us to see what we do. And what? What about that? Well, if you come with us and see what we do, then you'll know what we do. No, I ain't going to do that. I just want what you have. Well, that's it. That's all we got. Yeah, but you know what, man? I've heard that it's just a suggested program. Well, okay. You've heard that. Okay, Craig, we'll give you that. That's cool. It's the only suggestion we got, but okay, that's cool. Well, what do you mean? What do you mean it's the only suggestion you got? That's all we got, man. Well, what other choice is there? well, stay the way you are. You seem to be having fun. I don't know. Don't know what else to tell you. You know, it's a funny thing about that little thing in our book that says, rarely have we seen a person fail that has thoroughly followed our path. Now, we're talking about an alcoholic. That's the assumption here. Way earlier in the book, it talks about that. In fact, I heard my boy Clancy misquote it the other day, yesterday. I'm listening to one of the talks that he gave. And I know he knows this because he's the one that pounded it at me. And it's that forward to the second edition where it says, and we hear it misquoted all the time, like a lot of our literature. You'll hear it said like this. Well, you know, in that forward to the second edition, you know, the stats back in those days were a lot better than they are now. I disagree. No, Craig, you're wrong, because back then, you know, of everybody that came to AA, 50% got sober, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and amongst the remainder, they showed improvement. That isn't what it says. That isn't what it says. It says, not of everybody that comes to AA, it says of alcoholics who came to AA. Do you know in my town how many non-alcoholics end up in AA? About half my home group. It's closed AA meeting. I shouldn't say that. At least not of my type. You know, they can just not drink no matter what. Well, if I could just not drink no matter what, I wouldn't need AA. I'd just not drink no matter what and be happy. That doesn't work out for me. I've tried that many times. People have said to me, well, are you done? Well, hell yes, I'm done. I get done a lot. Getting done is not my problem. You know what my problem is? I start coming undone again. Oh, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I swear to God, I'm done. I'm never going to do that again. I was in rehab. I was in rehab 8 days. I mean, at the end, when it was really, 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 really terribly bad, horribly bad, terrible, terrible, done, 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 nothing left, done. Never going to do that again. Got into rehab, was in there 8 days. I mean, good grief, how much recovery can you stand in your lifetime? 8 days? Are you kidding me? And I didn't last 24 hours. And I was in shock. I knew I was done. The people in there, the patients in there, the counselors in there, the people that brought the meetings in there, are you guys done? Yes. I'm done. I swear to God, I'm done. I know I've said I'm done before, but this time I'm really freaking done. Bad. And I didn't last 24 hours. And I was in shock. I was. I was like, what in the heck is wrong with me? I mean, it was an oops. I mean, it really was. I mean, oops, it just happened before I even knew what was happening. I get it. You know, there's stories in the book that how in the heck did I get started again? And then go to my favorite line, oh, what's the use? I might as well go ahead and get sloshed now. I might as well. Alcoholism is horrific. Horrific. And the sad thing about alcoholism is what it does to everybody around us first. What it does to everybody around us first. How it just tears their hearts. It just guts them like a fish. It's horrific. We do it to our parents, to our wives, to our husbands, to our kids, to our bosses, to our families, to our churches, to our communities, to our employers. We don't take no prisoners. It's an equal opportunity destroyer. We just do it to everybody. You know, it is. It's the way it is. I don't care who or it's collateral. You know what? You should have known better than to get in my way. That's just kind of how it is. And I didn't know that. I knew something was needed, and I knew it was something I didn't have, but I didn't know what it was. And then I hear this thing from 29, that each individual in his own way, from his own point of view, describes how he came to believe in and maintains conscious contact with a power greater than themselves. I'm not interested in that. I just want to know how to not drink. So I go to these meetings, and you know, there's a lot of people in there, nice, friendly people, and they want to be helpful. If I had a warning, it would go something like this. Be careful of who you ask to be your sponsor. I'm not saying don't get a sponsor. I'm saying be careful who you ask to get a sponsor. I wish there was a chapter on how to interview a sponsor if you're a newcomer and don't know nothing about AA. If we had some instructions written down to say, I want you to find out. If you think you might have alcoholism, there's a couple of guys sitting in my morning meeting, and I've had conversation with them, and I've interviewed them, and I've spent a lot of time with them. I've spent several years with them. There's John. There is Jeff. And John was sponsoring Jeff. But John is not an alcoholic. He's something else. And I have no problem with other things. I got phone numbers in my phone right here to those members with other things. And I got schedules for other things in the console of my truck because it's a deal to me. I want you to get where you belong. Not that you aren't welcome to open meetings and stuff. You can come to all of them you want. We welcome you. I hope you hear something that lightens your day up. But my problem with someone sponsoring somebody like John was trying to sponsor Jeff. Jeff's relapsing himself to death, and John's not an alcoholic. Turns out Jeff isn't either. But Jeff now is sponsoring people in the meeting, new people in the meeting that may be alcoholic. And here's the problem with that. Franklin Williams had a saying, and I loved it. Franklin Williams was an old timer. God, he's been gone a long time now, but Franklin was delightful. He reminded me of my grandpa. He was just an old, I just loved him. And Franklin said, you can no more teach what you ain't learned than you can come back from where you ain't been. And that's all I'm talking about with this alcoholism. You know, I know there's a lot of pretend people in here, people that want to be on this and be a superstar social media circuit speaker or a big shot out on tour or whatever. I get all that. And they learn to, you know, they learn to talk the talk and everything. But if you ever sit and talk with them, oh, they can tell you about the triceps and the traditions and the concepts and the blah, 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 blah. But they can't talk to you about that spiritual malady that I call alcoholism, that internal thing that's going on inside of me. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Why are you depressed? You have no reason to be depressed. What's wrong with you? Well, you probably have divided, you know, you go to someone like that and say, oh, I'm really depressed. And the first thing I want to do is tell you, well, go see a shrink and see if he's got something for you. I'm not speaking out of school. It happened to me. I'm depressed. I don't know what's wrong with me. Are you doing AA? That was my answer, which I guess means yes. I'm going to a lot of meetings. I don't divulge too much. No, yeah, every day. You got a sponsor? Yes. Have you done that inventory? Well, of course, several. Really? Really? Well, I didn't really follow the directions. I got a sponsor, but we just go talk about how far I can hit a golf ball and stuff and how lucky I am and all that, and what a big shot I am at work and how lucky I am to be married who I'm married to, and she's a love and you're a love and everybody's a love and we're all in love and everything's wonderful. And I'm dying and I have no idea what's wrong with me. But I start hearing things in me as well, you know, it's possible. You're a sophisticated cat. You've developed outside issues. Outside issues. I like the sound of outside issues. I have developed, I'm so deep and sophisticated and complex that I have outside issues. No, God and AA ain't big enough to help this kind of stuff. Craig is really something. He's got outside issues. Oh, so what I'm going to do is go get some outside help. Now, do not misunderstand what I'm saying. If you're struggling in your marriage, I encourage you to get some help. Don't just let that thing go to hell just because, oh, I'm going to do AA and we're going to do AA and it's going to be AA or the highway. You know what? Sometimes you might need a little kickstart. I remember some of my old vehicles, I used to have to use starting fluid because they'd crank and crank and crank and I'd kill the battery. But just one little puff of starting fluid and boom, they'd fire up. Sometimes I think people need a little help, and I'm going to give you that. And the book says, you know, we've been supplied with these doctors and psychologists and practitioners. You know, we should take our health problems to them. What almost killed me is I tried to take my alcoholism to one of them. And he was very familiar with Alcoholics Anonymous. And hate to tell you this, but today he's kind of a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But we'll get to that in a minute. And he was really, I mean, for years, he worked with me and Karen. And it was marriage counseling and, you know, outside issues. And then talking about the depression and blah, blah, blah. And eventually medication came up and kind of scared me, but excited me at the same time. I could take a few pills and not go to meetings. Perfect. I'm good for it because I work a lot. I need a little elbow room. I need a little freedom. I can't do all these damn meetings. But you know what? Really, the only time I ever felt good is when I was in a meeting. It's when I was not in a meeting that I was suffering from outside issues. And when I was at home, oh my God, outside, you know, whatever. And anyway, a long story short, one night, I mean, we'd been seeing him for years. And one night he was real upset and the kids are out in the waiting room and me and her are in our corners in his room and he's fidgeting with papers and shuffling around. He won't look at us. And I'm getting a bad feeling. I'm inside. I'm thinking, something's wrong here. Now, he'd been seeing me one-on-one for a little while, and this was Karen's first real trip back. She came with me one other time, but it was her first real trip when we were all together in there, me and him and her, and he's real upset. And he looks up, and he's got tears running down his face. I'm telling you what, when you're going to a guy looking for help and he looks up and he's crying, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, good grief, are we in the wrong spot? But he said to us, you know, you guys have become more than clients to me. You become really good friends. And I'm listening to that. He said, in fact, I've become very fond of you too. And I started thinking, oh my God, I know what it is. Him and Karen have been having an affair. That's what it is. And you know what? Okay. I don't blame. She's a nice guy. You know, I get it. Jeez, I can't believe this. And he went on to say, particularly, I've become fond of Craig. I don't know that I'm going that direction. And he says, I'm not going to be able to see you guys he said, for 4 months. We saw him every Thursday for many, many moons. Well, there was a few times we had to skip, and that was one of them. We'd skipped a few times because of his work, her work, and my work. Sometimes the schedules didn't. Anyway, he said, well, I won't be able to see you guys for 4 months. And I'll tell you guys, that was my oasis in the desert of futility. Maybe this Thursday, maybe Thursday, we go and get the answer. You know, Thursday's going to be a good day. We're going to get it figured out. It's going to work out. I'm going to find out what's wrong and get the answer. And man, I've been going like that there for years. Going like that. I go to meetings. I know the answer ain't in the damn meetings. I've been in meetings, thousands of meetings, and I get hopeful, but then I go home and, you know, it's not. And, you know, and I'm going to this counselor and he's a good guy, and he still is a good guy, and he always was a good guy. And he loved me and he loved her and he wanted to help us. All that is on the table. His name was Craig. Craig Wetzel was his name, or is his name. I shouldn't say was, he's still around. Craig Wetzel is his name. And he said, I won't be able to see you guys for 4 months. I remember thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I mean, 4 months with no hope. Good grief. I mean, I swear to God, I don't know that I'm going to make that. By this time, I guess I'm, 12 years sober. 12 years. I got double digit sobriety. I'm a big shot at work. I got more power, and looking back on that, my Lord, I didn't know how much power I had, but they still talk about it. Like nobody will ever have that kind of power again. Nobody. And anyway, as far as work is concerned, and Craig says, you want to know why? Because he'd been talking to us about putting me on this medicine. You know, he'd been telling Karen, you know, and I, you know, there's this medicine that can help. He's depressed. I'm thinking, geez, that's an understatement. And he's going to, I wish I would have kept the prescriptions. I would love to have that prescription hanging right here in the kitchen on one of these walls right here. I often think about looking him up and getting him to write me the prescription again and backdate it so I can put it on the wall. I'd love to have that, but I threw it away. But he's going to prescribe medicine for me. And this night he can't see us for 4 months because he's going to Betty Ford. He said, you want to know why? And I, sure. You know, why not? He said, because I'm going to Betty Ford to get in. To Betty Ford to get off the medicine I was going to prescribe to him. And he pointed right at me. And I thought, oh my God. Oh my God. Part of me thought it was kind of a good, bad thing. It's like, whew, you know, I dodged the bullet. One part of me felt like I dodged the bullet. And the other part of me felt like, ah, oh, damn it. Every time I'm about ready to get help, somebody pulls the rug out from under me. And that's what I felt like. I'll tell you what, that just in a series of circumstances kicked me off the fence. Fortunately, I was still facing into AA. My beloved sponsor says all the time, you know, it's going to come a time in your sobriety that you're just going to be on the fence, and that's just the way it is. And life's going to come along and kick you off that fence. And where you end up depends on which way you were facing when life kicked you. You're facing out of AA, bad news. We know some of them. You guys know some of them. Fortunately, I was still kind of peeking in. And I ended up in AA like I'd never been in AA before. Karen and I's marriage didn't work out. It was not terribly long. We lasted about another year or so. But, you know, we'd split up and it was bad and it was horrible and it was humiliating and shameful and just, oh my God. But I'm going to tell you something. I was glad the beatings stopped. She was nice to it. Just trust me when I say the beatings, there was no, it was just brutal. Every day I'm beating myself. I was in a relationship I knew I should have never been in, ever been in. There was a lot of shame behind that. There was a lot of remorse and regret and sorrow and humiliation and just on and on and on. I don't know what to do. So I started doing AA, and it wasn't my fault. And I reconnected with that old sponsor, and it found me in that rehab. And he said he'd work with me and he'd help me. And I was scared. I thought, you know, he's going to stick it to me. And he should stick it to me. Because the girl I was just talking about, he was actually married to first. The one I was going to marriage counseling with is the one Bob was married to. It's the mother of his daughter, the little stepdaughter I raised. So yeah, they'll tell you a little bit about why Craig knew he should never have been in that relationship. I was never married to my wife. I was always married to my sponsor's ex-wife. I was always married to Bob's ex-wife. That was what I was married to. When that little girl had come running down the hallway saying, "Daddy," I knew who she was talking to, and it wasn't me. I knew damn well who it was she was talking to. She didn't know any better. "You ain't talking to me, kid. You're talking to somebody else." The disconnect that goes with that. And it's the way I felt my whole life, disconnected in my own family. So I drank a little bit. Okay, I drank a little bit when I was young, and it was marvelous because it ended that separation. Or I shouldn't say it ended the separation. It just, like, the separation didn't matter. It's, "Oh, I'm good with it. Whatever. As long as I got my medicine, I'm cool." Well, you know how it goes with us. You know, we get kind of over-medicated, let's say. You know, I've developed now a habit. I got this drinking thing going on, and my delusion is that I can quit anytime I want. I just don't want to. So that thing in the book that says, you know, if when you honestly want to, you find you can't quit entirely, that doesn't apply to me. Well, why not? Because I never honestly wanted to quit. Honestly, never. Never. Or if when drinking, you find little control over the amount you take. One day that got my attention. I'm like, yeah, that kind of happens to me. It says if either one of those conditions apply. Now, most of us will say, well, turns out I had both. Well, yes, I agree. But at the time, I wasn't willing to cop to the first one because I still think I'm in charge of that. I never wanted to quit. It doesn't apply to me. But I remember some horrific child memories of young memories in my teens when guys were saying, "Oh, you didn't bring him again. Dude, you drink like we're going to run out." We usually do. I mean, you know, we usually do. Why don't you learn to maintain, Craig? Yeah, I've been working on that this week. Yeah, I've been working on it. I'm going to maintain. I mean, it's awkward. You feel foolish. And just, there's something, it seems to me like you guys do it. It looks to me like you guys are worse than me. I don't know if that's ever been true. It just always looked to me like they were worse than me. Maybe they weren't. Maybe they weren't. I used to say they were. I don't know that that's true anymore. My perception is pretty skewed, pretty bad. So, you know, when you talk about this, that you indicate that there may be a power, and I know who you're talking about. I've been in church. I know who that is, and I don't measure up to that. If that's your answer to what's wrong with me, then there's no solution to what's wrong with me, because that guy does not like me. And I remember saying that one night in a meeting, and the guy said, "So God doesn't like you?" And I said, "That's right." He said, "Really? How come?" And I said, "Well, I don't really have an answer. I'm not expecting a question and answer period afterwards. These goofballs come over and get in your business, but why doesn't God like you?" You just don't. And you know that. Yep. Why? What is it that you've done? Why doesn't God like you? And I'll tell you, if I could have told you something, I would have said, because I'm too stained. I'm too dirty. I'm too disrespectful. I'm too disloyal. I lie too much. I cheat. I've stole from my brothers and my parents. I've abandoned my kid. I mean, I got my list. I couldn't answer then. And I said, well, I pissed God off. And he got funny. You pissed God off? And I knew he was mocking me. And I pissed God off. He said, really? You pissed off the thing that runs and creates everything. Now I know he's mocking me and I'm getting mad. And he said, man, you must really be something. You must really be something. And he's looking me up and down. He said, you still living at Samaritan House? Yeah. You got you working? A little bit, not much. Just whenever Gary's got pianos to move, I move pianos. He said, so you don't even have a steady job? No. You got a valid driver's license? Yeah. Utah? No, it's not valid. This is Nevada. He said, I can't believe you. I've met the guy that's pissed God off. He said, man, that's something I can't wait to tell my friends. And I want to give him the one finger salute. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm a little, you shouldn't treat newcomers that way. I was disrespectful of him to do that. I'm glad he did, because it sure started a thought process with me. And this old guy named Gary was telling me to get on my knees, and I knew he was telling me to pray, and I'm not going to pray. But he said, get on your knees at night. I said, I live in a room with 13 other guys. I'm not getting on my knees at night. That's been laid 300 years. That ain't going to happen. And he said, well, go in the bathroom and get on your knees. And I said, I told you I'm not praying. He said, I've told you to pray. He said, I just told you to get on your knees and thank whatever's running the universe. He said, if you want to thank God, thank God. Thank whatever's running things for another day of sobriety. I said, that's praying. He said, no, it's not. He said, I want you to do it in the morning too. Just go back in the bathroom. You're going to brush your teeth and stuff. Get on your knees and say, help me today. I said, but that's praying. He said, no, it's not. I said, if somebody saw me, they'd say I'm praying. He said, then have them call me. Have them call me and I'll tell them, no, he's not praying. He's just following directions. And I bought it. I know that sounds dopey, but okay. So I did it. And apparently this thing doesn't care how sincere I am, because stuff started happening. Stuff I can't explain to this day started happening. I started developing my own relationship with the power. Now, after I'm some years sober and I've got the bull by the horns and everything is going good, I start flying high and I go right back into self-reliance. That's why when Uncle Don talks every day about persistence and perseverance and practice and prayer, and it's a constantly reminding ourselves that we're no longer running the show, saying many times throughout the day, thy will, not mine be done. It's why I do that today. I get those little reminders. I spend time with them an hour or so in the morning with those after my step 11 next to my bed, the morning on awakening. I don't have a lot of big plans usually in the day. Got my little routine. I'm going to go help Brett. You're one of the guys I used to sponsor. I'm going to go help him get some more of his stuff out of his apartment up to his new home. He's so excited about it. In the midst of an absolute snot storm, just stuff in his life going crazy. And he's high strung and emotional like I am. But he says to me all the time, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you sit in the meetings with them. I don't know how you take this stuff. I don't know how you don't react. And I'm like, I'm a little surprised by it too, but just absolutely do not react. That is not going to improve things. And Al will remind me all the time, well, what do you think Uncle Don's going to say? And I'm like, I don't want to talk about Uncle Don, because he's always, well, nah, little buddy, I don't think it's necessary for you to take that gun to the meeting. That will do nothing but cause more trouble. I know I have done stuff that way. I don't think God wants you to be that kind of a man. And I'm like, damn it, why do I talk to these people? They take all the fun out of my day. you know, I just got to go be nice to people. And he says, well, now I think courteous is the best thing for this thing this morning. You be courteous to these people. It doesn't matter what they have done. And oh my God, I don't want to be courteous. I want to punch him in the face. Well, now, little buddy, do you think God would like it if you punched another one in the face? Oh, but it keeps me on track. Those little things. That's why AA isn't a thing I think that we can do alone. I don't think it's designed for us to do alone. You know, it talks about, you know, us and we and our. It's a collective thing here. Our group conscience. Just, you know, so many things have happened to me over the years that have turned me into the guy I said I'd never be. And that's both good and bad. You know, the guy I'd never be is never going to be a guy going to be giving talks on a Zoom format. I'm not going to do book studies. I don't care about the traditions. And I did a talk on tradition 4 this morning. I'm trying to get, well, that'd be a lie if I said I was trying to. We are going to start discussing the concepts. We haven't started it yet in our little Wednesday night tradition study. And Al's been there with me, and it's a neat little meeting. And there's not a lot of people there, but there's a lot of sobriety there, and there's a lot of experience there. All those things that I said, no, you are never going to see me with that. You know, you're never going to see me with a big book. Well, I got two of them sitting under this computer right here, holding it at the right height for me at the kitchen table, and it's part of my collection, and I must have 100 big books in here, probably. 75 anyway. I got mine in my truck. You know, I walk in with a stack of books that thick this morning. I have Not Living Sober, Al. The Language of the Heart, AA Comes of Age, and my big book, and 12 and 12 all go in the meeting with me this morning because I might need something out of it. Now, I don't usually take them in all the meetings, but they're always in my truck. I use them very frequently. I, you know, just those things like that that I see. I go to book studies and tradition studies and talk about steps and traditions and sponsorship and sponsor guys and work with new guys. And heard a fifth step part of it. He's supposed to be calling me and hasn't done it yet on the phone yesterday. That we're talking to a kid that lives in Oregon that I've spent a lot of time with. And I, you know, all the things I said I would never do. And that's all great. There's some things that I knew I would never do that I've done that are a disaster and have put me in the position I'm in. And I won't bore you with the details of that, but needless to say, when you talk about being ashamed and disgraced and humiliated and regretful and remorseful, and there's just some things you can't fix. There's just sometimes you take actions that you cannot untake. And I've done those things because I got flying high. And I get, you know, people, you know, give you a lot of accolades and they're nice and they tell you a lot of nice things about you. And oh, you're busy and you do so much. And oh, yes, yes. And it's okay if y'all tell me that. I just say, thank you. That's nice. Thank you. But you better not take that inside and think, because the day that one day that little thing hit me and I, you know what, you damn right I do. And I'm dead. That was the kiss of death. That right there was the kiss of death. You damn right I do a lot. No humility there, right back into self-reliance. And I think humility is the key here, that I got to be right-sized. I got to know that I don't know. Jimmy Williams used to say, as long as you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and you begin to know you don't know, then you'll know. And I understand that today. And I'm following the directions today. I'm following the directions. It always seems to me to be much quicker. You're going to be much quicker and easier if I just jam it together the way I see it. But it never works. It never works out. Well, hold on a minute. I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true because my sponsor said something to me one day years ago. And he said to me, Craig, we're leaving the Thai club or something. And he said, we've been in one of those meetings where we're talking about, you know, getting our way and God's way and all that stuff. And Bob said to me, he said, you know what's worse than me not getting my way? And I'm thinking, no, actually, I don't. He said, me getting my way. I said, you getting your way is worse than not getting your way? He said, yeah, because it encourages me to try to do it again. And I thought, that's true. I've gotten my way. I've gotten my way. And I convinced myself, see, I know what I'm doing. I can handle this. I know how to manage my defects. I got it. God's busy. Let him help the little people. I've got this. It's not a problem. I know what I'm doing. Hell, I'm sober a long time. I do a lot for a lot. In fact, never before has somebody done so much for so many for so little. You know, I mean, whatever that story is, you know, you can start believing your own press. And I'm telling you, Al and I have talked about, I don't mean to single him out, but Al and I talk about this kind of stuff all the time because we've seen good members of AA, good solid members of AA, sober longer than me and him, for sure. Mentors of ours. We've seen them go sideways and it doesn't end well because they fall right into that, you know, I'm something special. Anything like that. You know what? We ain't got time. Good. So I'll shut up here in just a minute. Who's that? Tell me how, what do we got left, Frank? What, Al, one of you guys, just give me a, what do we got? 2 or 3 minutes left? I can't see him in the meeting. I could see somebody waving. Here he comes. I still can't see that, but whatever. Just turn the damn thing off. Mute me when it's done. All right, perfect. That's more than enough. So one of the things that disturbs me, and I know we're not getting a real, there's no continuity in what I'm talking about, I guess, other than, you know what, when we start setting ourselves aside and becoming a special case, Clancy always used to say to us, and he had that big sign down in his little, in the little shed down there in the backyard that says, you don't understand, my case is different. You know how I say my case is different? Well, I'll say my case is different because nobody understands what it's like to be the fat kid. Nobody understands what it's like to be semi-retarded. I guess that's a bad word to say, but that's the way I say it. You know, nobody, my mom used to get mad. You are not. Hell, I wasn't. But we start making, because I have had heard people say, and so have you, well, you know, your language is harsh and sexist, and I just don't feel welcome. I don't feel, perfect, I got it. I don't feel welcome. So we need to make a new pamphlet, and you need to change, all of you folks need to change your language so I feel more comfortable coming in the door. Well, if I felt more comfortable looking back on my own past, I never would have came in the door. It's because I was so terribly uncomfortable and there was no relief for me anywhere. I was drinking, but just getting rummy stupid. It stopped doing for me and just kept doing to me. You know, in the beginning of my drinking, I suppose it's for all of us alcoholics, drinking does something to us, but it does so much for us. We can't see what it's doing to us back here because what it does for us is right up here in front and what it's doing to us is way up here in the back. But then it starts to shift. I mean, if you look at my hands on that screen, this one looks a lot bigger than this one. But as time goes up and it starts to even up, but I still got the hope, oh my God, it's going to do something for me over here. I wanted to do something for me, but it's just doing a lot to me. And then pretty soon it starts to make that shift where it's doing just, it ain't, the for me is gone. And pretty much it's just doing stuff to me. And all it's doing is doing stuff to me. And that's all I can see. I mean, that's what was happening. That's what drove me in here. And you wound up, so this guy at the Thai club one night, I was expressing my displeasure with how things were going down there. And I'm living in Samaritan House and I'm, you know, I don't know, 30 minutes sober, whatever it was. I don't know. I'm sober a little while, but not long. But I know about a lot what's wrong with AA. And this old guy, Don Williams, said, "Hey, can I tell you something, Tiger?" He got tired of it. And I said, "Sure, I really like this guy. I looked up to him. He was great." He flew the SR-71 spy plane. And he knew Gary Powers and that. And that's my childhood stuff. Anyway, Don said to me, "Can I tell you something, Tiger?" I said, "Yeah, sure, Don, what's up?" He said, "We didn't come down here tonight to join you." And all these buddies laughed and they thought it was funny. And I had hurt feelings and it was like, oh, I'm terrible. But he was dead right. He was dead right. But now you want us to change what we do so you can join. No, how about just join us? Join us. Let God take care of that transformation instead of human power. Well, change your damn literature so I feel like, you know, I need a pamphlet for fat Mormons that were homeless. That's what I need. When are you guys going to write that pamphlet? I feel neglected because you haven't written that pamphlet. You need to do that. Get on GSO's ass about it. Come on. I mean, it's ridiculous, but that's where we're headed. That's where we're headed with this. We're going to change everything we do and what we stand for and believe in so that we don't hurt somebody's feelings. You know what? They needed to hurt my feelings. You know what hurts my feelings? You know that the number one thing that hurts my feelings? The truth. I can't, you know, like Jack Nicholson said, in it, you can't handle the truth. That's right. I can't handle the truth. It hurts my feelings. I want you to change the truth so it doesn't hurt my feelings. No, I don't want you to change the truth. I want the truth to always be the truth. And the truth is, if you're dying from alcoholism, you're not going to get hung up on all this language, because there was one hung up on the language service assembly I was at, and they were crying about it, and I don't feel like I fit in, and I can't go, and I'm afraid to tell anybody what I am. And she ends up having lunch with some friends of mine. One of them's actually, he used to run GSO for 10 years. Anyway, and Greg is real shifty and sly and cool. And Greg just said, "So what's your home group?" "Well, I don't have one." He said, "All right. Well, who's your sponsor?" "Well, I don't have one." He said, "Okay, you ain't found one yet." He said, "That's cool. So what meeting is it that you attend regularly?" "Well, I don't attend a meeting regularly." He said, "And you don't feel like you fit in." That's a real puzzler. That's a real puzzler. It's the thing I said early on. Why don't you come and do what we do? Kent Coleman always talked about that. You know, do what I do. "Well, I don't know what you do." "Well, if you did what I do, you'd know what I do. Come do what I do. Come do what I do." Because a lot of this AA stuff is monkey see, monkey do. It's not a big complex rockin' science thing. God doesn't make too hard of terms with those who seek him. God doesn't, he ain't that monster that we all grew up thinking he was. He's not. That's been my experience. That's been my experience. So I guess the essence of Craig Klob's talk today is, I come to AA and changed my mind. And changed my mind about a lot of things. About you, about life, about God, about AA, about me, about my family. About my childhood changed. My childhood changed. I take the steps and clean up the wreckage of my past, and I have this childhood that I just sit in tears sometimes with my brothers talking about. It's so wonderful. Don't let people tell you you can't change. You can. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I love you guys. Thank you.